This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Great visit with Dan Murphy of ESPN and ESPN.com about the oncoming legislation for name, image, and likeness and kind of all the things involved. We started this with Carlos Rodon throwing a no-hitter last night, the former NC State hurler of the Wolfpack for the Chicago White Sox. Threw a no-hitter last night in Chicago to beat the Indians. Congratulations to him. And that got us into a story. Docs Aiken, who, in case you missed it, will be a part of this hour as well, talked yesterday about throwing out the first pitch at a Phillies game with his teammate Matt Moore. And then Packer told us that he threw out a first pitch at a Charlotte Knights game years ago on what apparently was Mark Packer bobblehead night.
That's right.
And said bobblehead is on the desk today with Pack.
Looks just like there Lars Tiffany.
Looks good.
Looks like Lars Tiffany.
Yeah. Looks like Lars Tiffany. Well, little did we know that on the proverbial secondary markets, the Mark Packer bobblehead is available, ladies and gentlemen.
What?
$7.
Who in the world would pay $7
plus you
for
play
that? $99? That guy drunk? Is he crazy? I tell you what, the guy that's trying to sell my bobblehead for $99.99 or best offer, let me tell whoever that guy is. By the way, it says brand new. This happened like 20 years ago. But the dude that's trying to sell this thing for $99.99, if you're watching this show, let me tell you something. I could probably rummage through my basement on the other side here, and for $50, I'll give you a dozen of them. Because for $50, I'll take $50. I'll give you a dozen of these goofy bobbleheads that aren't worth 10 cents. And I'm going to go to Lexington Barbecue this weekend, and I'm going to load up. So the dude trying to sell me off
the counter.
Yeah, the guy trying to sell my bobblehead for $99.99. If you're watching, if you're within earshot or watching or listening to us, whether it be on SiriusXM or Terrestrial, I could probably find a dozen of these things in the box. You give me $50, I'll give you every one of them.
I'd like to point out a couple things here on our, by the way, the crack research staff who did this is A++ work. First of all, the $30 bobblehead offer at the top only has 12 hours left on it, so you got to go now. And it's got free shipping, but it is pre-owned and doesn't come in a box. Now, the second one, Mark Packer Sports Radio, no box, bobblehead, no sign at the feet, pre-owned, $7 your best offer, plus you have to pay $11 to ship it. That's totally uncalled for. If the cost of the bobblehead is less than the shipping, we got a problem. Then the $99.99 or best offer, plus $7.99 shipping. There you go.
Who in the world would keep such a thing? I mean, I'm telling you, it must have been. I probably did this 20 years ago, I'm guessing. At least 15, probably. Who in their right mind would still have one? That's embarrassing.
I love it.
It's embarrassing.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So there you go. That's how we started the show. God. And who knows? Maybe one will get sold during the show.
You can have this one.
He'd give you a dozen of them.
I'll tell you what I'll do. If somebody's in the here's what I'll do. If somebody is in the Charlotte area, I will trade you a Bojangles biscuit. And I'll go sausage and egg. I will trade you a Bojangles biscuit for this bobblehead right here. You contact us. You can have, and I'll even sign it if you want. I want tater tots and the Bojangles biscuit.
If I sign it for this one,
that's what it's worth.
Bo-taters pack.
That's it.
It's Bo-taters.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what it's worth. I'll go for biscuit for bobblehead. Trade right now, right after the show. I'll meet you.
I love it.
Meet you at your favorite Bojangles. I will meet you there. Tie in the sponsorship. And you can have the bobblehead and whatever. Whatever makes you happy. Things aren't worth 10 cents.
All right. Dan Murphy did a tremendous job with us. He was fantastic. We talked going to the top of the hour about all the things that are out in front here. What concerns you about right now, Pac, and this name, image, and likeness? The unknown?
No, that doesn't bother me at all. What concerns me is the ineptitude of the leadership. And that leadership is the NCAA. And I just don't – I have no trust in them. As a matter of fact, to tie all this together with name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal, I read yesterday, and I fell off the couch when I read it. With all this stuff with the transfer portal, I told you, I'm not going to waste 1 second on it keeping up with everybody. I'm just going to assume everybody's gone. And then again, we'll see what the rosters look like in October, November. But I read that the NCAA is going to track IP addresses to find out the folks in the portal and go after the coaches who've given their passwords to non-coaches. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, you mean this organization, which has found ways to spend ridiculous sums of money on lawyers so they get nothing done, actually was going to have a group follow IP addresses and come after the coaches? Hey, guys, there's coaches that we've got wiretaps on offering hundreds of thousands of dollars that are still coaching. And you're going to worry about IP addresses and go after these? It's almost laughable. I mean, you guys can't even take care of yourselves, much less trying to go after somebody else. I mean, so we're going to sit here and talk about, hey, the state law of Florida goes into July 1st for name, image, and likeness. And as Dan pointed out, we've known this is going to happen for years and years and years. And yet here we are waiting on the NC2A to figure out, well, what do you think the rules are? I don't know, Mr. Emmert. Let's get another subcommittee meeting. See, we'll get Packer bobblehead traded, get some biscuits in here, and we'll conduct another meeting to have a subcommittee meeting. How about go get something done? How about we say, listen, here is what we're going to do. Period. Congress, no Congress, whatever. There's no leadership.
Yeah.
This is, to me, that's what scares me. The fact when you have no leadership, none, you are bound to fail. I don't care if it's the NCAA, an insurance company, a radio station, a television network. If your leadership and management stinks, you got no shot. You got no chance to make it. That I know for a fact.
Yeah, it is all the things that tie this back to the NCAA is like, and again, I'm with you and you're thinking about ultimately what this becomes, except I've got a few more schools involved in it, right? I'm not one of these guys that ultimately thinks that we're just talking about like, you know, 50 schools. I'm thinking more about 72, 68, somewhere in that neighborhood. Nonetheless, I do worry about the administration of this without leadership, without the bigger leadership. And that's the thing that, in all honesty, college athletics has struggled with here, Pac, is that those schools, however many there are, they've gotten out ahead. For better or for worse, they've gotten out ahead, right? And now this entire legislation is coming about because of those schools. No offense to the schools in the Mid-American Conference or the Southland or the Big South or the, you know, whatever. This legislation is geared to those 68 to 72 schools, I think.
Well, I say 40 to 50, and you may be right. It may be 70. It may be 90. It's whoever can make it work. I mean, and I don't think it's got anything to do with conferences. I don't think it's got everything to do with, hey, can you operate a business, right? Do we generate enough revenue to, number one, conduct a football program, a basketball program, a women's tennis, whatever it is. And I think the one thing that's getting lost in all this conversation, which is going to have to be in the conversation, is Title IX. Title IX is a federal rule and regulation. And wherever this thing goes, whatever it eventually looks like, Title IX is still in place. So there's going to have to be a balance of, hey, our football program generates X amount of dollars and we're able to do this. Well, again, you're going to have to balance out schedules and scholarships because Title IX is in place. And so therefore, whatever women's programs are there, that if any generate revenue, awesome. Icing on the cake. but most of them don't. But you're still going to have to keep that in balance with Title IX, regardless of what this landscape eventually looks like. So that is going to come into play as well. Hasn't been discussed as much, but it's there. It's sitting right there, and everybody's going to have to deal with it.
No doubt about it. This is, I'm telling you, this is the, and you always talk about the wild landscape we're getting ready to enter in college athletics.
We're in it.
This is at the front end right here. We're just getting off the boat, as they say. It's going to be a very, very interesting rest of the spring. We'll try and blend in guests who can speak to these issues far better than we can. There are a lot of them, former athletic directors, the impact it's going to have on coaches, recruiting, things of that nature. And we'll continue to do that through the spring and summer, because I think that's part of what we're here to do as well, to help guide you as an ACC fan and someone who follows an institution or follows the conference along the way. It's an important aspect of, I think, what we're charged to do with this program. Don't you, Pac?
Yep. It's the real world. It's the new real world that, and it's not just an ACC thing. This is SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and anybody else in between. Everybody's having to deal with the new reality.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Many thanks to Dan Murphy, who joined us in hour number one, talking about name, image, and likeness. Now we're going to a superstar that wished name, image, and likeness was in play, because she'd be making some cash. Cash money is what I'm talking about. Hannah Steelman joins us. She joined us once before. She is back. Hannah, first of all, welcome back to the show, and congratulations. That was some kind of performance.
Hey, thank you for having me. And yeah, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
I was kidding around with you during the break. Every time I get my Ford F-150 and I'm driving around beautiful Myers Park here in Charlotte, I see folks out there running, and most of them look miserable. Look like me trying to run, which is not pretty. But when you get into that zone, that just running and you're free as a bird and life is good. I mean, I really wished that I could do that. And I know you've got that, because you've got to be able to just say, hey, when I go run, man, I'm in my own zone. Nothing can bother me. It's as free as the day is long. What's it feel like to be in that kind of mindset when you're just doing your thing?
Absolutely. I hear you, because running is such a hard sport. Like, I wouldn't do it if I didn't find it fun.
Right.
Because, like, why would I put myself through so much pain if I didn't enjoy it, you know? So I think, yeah, like you said, you just kind of get in this zone, and then I think what makes it worth it is when it all pays off. And eventually, with consistent hard work, although it is painful sometimes, when you reap the benefits, that's, you know, what makes it all worth it.
All right. So Hannah, running to, obviously, you know, the thrill of running, or the release it gives you, and then you blend in competition. Take me through the two mentalities that you have to have, because when you run like in an event, you're trying to win the event. So that's a different edge than when you're just running to find yourself into that zone of running, right?
Right. I think me especially, not especially, but I think just being runners, I feel like we're usually competitive people anyway. And so having that mindset of like, you know, I'm here, I've put in all this hard work, I want to show it and I want it to pay off. So, you know, just standing up to the line and being ready to compete. And then, with every little goal that we set, it's just that competitive mindset that helps us like want to accomplish and click off each of those goals.
Hannah, in your position, why steeplechase versus cross country, a regular track and field event, if you will? I mean, what makes steeplechase the one for you as opposed to other potential running sports?
So I was actually both a runner and a basketball player in high school. So coming out of high school into college, the first coach to introduce me to the steeplechase was like, okay, you did basketball, so you must have been athletic, or you must be athletic. So we're going to throw you in the steeplechase. And, you know, it was scary because I had never hurdled anything in my life. So I guess like he just had a good eye for it. And then after doing it a couple times, I really enjoy how it, you know, is different from just like the flat running in circles. And the cool thing about the steeplechase is instead of taking it lap by lap, like a lot of other track races, you literally have to take it barrier by barrier. So it really splits the race up and honestly speeds it up in your head too.
All right, but 9:46:35 is a record, not only for the event, it blew up the facility record. Packer and I got questions, though, about there's this one part of the steeplechase where you hit the hurdle, you hit the block, if you will, and then you land in the water.
Right.
So you know it's coming. Some people don't like wet shoes, though, Hannah. I mean, you know, so what's the rip there? How do you survive? How do you get through that part of it?
So really, if you're doing it right, you're supposed to get 1 foot wet, and that would be the furthest foot or the closest foot that's in the water. And then you know you're doing it right if you only have one shoe that's super soaked when you finish. Personally, I think the water jump's the best part. It's a lot of fun. You just kind of like catapult yourself out there. And I think the goal is to do it as smoothly as possible and continue your running form and keep that momentum. And yeah, it's just, it's cool to say like, oh, I ran in some water today. Because like you said, like it's different than a normal cross country or track event.
Hannah, I don't know if you know this. There are new rules next year for the steeplechase. I've agreed to do this. I'm going to sit in a raft drinking tropical drinks and you're going to have to jump over me next year. So enjoy it while you can.
Obstacles.
It's not true.
Yeah. So, I mean, no, we're just adding a new, you talked about how you break it up. Then, you know, it's a segment by next year when you get to that spot for future races, I will be wearing a raft. I've been sitting in a raft drinking tropical drinks. So be careful next year. All right. Moving forward on that. I just think we need to do something to spice up the sport a little bit. So that's, I've agreed to do that. How about that?
Those last couple of laps when it gets hard, I will be envious of you. But
well, by
right
the way,
now they
I didn't mean to interrupt you. When you like now that this part is over, like today, if you said, man, it's a beautiful day in Raleigh or whatever the case may be, I just want to go for a run. Like I just want to, you know, I'm done with school, whatever the case may be. I've got issues, some things are bothering. I just need to go run and clear my head. What do you do? I mean, you're an expert in all this. Is it a 2 mile run, a 5 mile run? You just do your thing. Cause when people love to run, I mean, you guys could go, you'd go run to Chapel Hill if you didn't know any better. And people go, oh, by the way, Hannah, you need to turn around and get back to Raleigh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think if I'm not in full training and I don't have a specific amount of mileage I need to hit, it's literally just running without a watch, not knowing the distance until I feel like stopping. And, you know, depending, I guess you like get into it and you just see how your body feels. And if you feel like you could go forever, I probably would go for a super long time. But if I was feeling like garbage, for lack of a better term, I would turn around and stop. Because if I didn't have a training regimen to follow and I just wanted to get out there for a few minutes, it's all about like listening to the body in that way. So
Hannah, that's what I do. See, this is why I don't understand running. I do that every day, but it's normally to the mailbox. And then I realize, I've had enough. I think I'm going back home. You know, and then the mailbox is about 20 feet from the front door. And I'm like, yeah, that's about it. I'm good. I got a good sweat. Got my mail. I'm going to go back home. So that's why I'm fascinated by runners, because it's just like you get in that zone. And I just, man, I'm so envious of people that can do that. Because to me, it's kind of like flying. I mean, you get into a place that nobody can bother you. You know, nobody can bother you. You don't get a phone call. You, like you said, you'd run to Chapel Hill if you were in that zone, right? I mean, you just keep going. Just keep going. Be awesome. I wish I could do that.
Maybe if you make your goal to make it past the mailbox, and then you make it past the mailbox, and then you run just a little bit more that day. And then that's when you experience a runner's high. You're like, oh my gosh, I can go further. And then you just keep challenging yourself further and further.
No, Hannah, I don't think you're going to be my coach. I just, you know, your attitude stinks. I don't like anything that you just said. I think mailbox is about my limit. All right. Even the dogs look at me like, nah, come on, big man. Let's go back inside. We're done with this. So I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna leave the heavy lifting Fair to enough. You. You are the true professional here. You're the pro. I'm gonna leave that all to you.
Okay, and I'll leave this interview stuff take to you.
They're a good point. Nice job. Take me through the rest of the spring here. How does this work for you? Because I know you had the event last weekend. There's more on the schedule for NC State. There's obviously nationals and things of that nature. How does all this work? I mean, because then in the summer, I know independent of team competition, you'll do some other things as well. So you talk about being in training. I'm guessing you're in training now in some respect. Does it ramp up, ramp down for you?
When we approach the end of the season and those big championship meets, that's when training will kind of go down in intensity and volume so that we can be as rested and fresh as possible for those big meets. That's what we call the taper. These next couple of months, we'll keep, you know, steadily like with our training, keep it consistent. But then once we get to ACCs, regionals, nationals, and eventually the Olympic trials for some of us, will be kind of steadily declining that training. So that we can feel as fresh as possible. And then going into summer, at some point, I don't know when that is yet, we would take a break because, you know, you can't be going all the time in this sport, especially. And then eventually we'll steadily ramp up training again to get ready for cross country.
Hannah, when you get done with an event like this, I mean, it's time to wolf some food down, right? I mean, so what's the go-to after you're burning, man, all the time. Calories are gone. Mm-hmm. Exact opposite on this side. But so right. What do you do to scarf down afterwards? What's on the agenda?
My go-to is, well, there's always got to be ice cream in there in some form, milkshake, whatever that is. And then it's usually burger and fries.
There you go. Breakfast of champions right there. Breakfast of champions right there, Hannah. I love it.
Let me just say this. That right there is the central connection between you and Packer.
That's it.
Burger, fries, and ice cream.
That's it. Hannah, we can make it work.
Right there. There
you go. We can make it work, Hannah. Yeah. We can get that done. Well, listen, congratulations. You are awesome at what you do. And when we saw you break the record, I was like, here we go, Wes. Here's our girl rocking and rolling, doing her thing. So we wish you congratulations on all that and continued success.
Thank you so much. You guys rock.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
We have had so many talented women on our show this week. Student athletes, broadcasters, you name it. We're going to brag about that later on in the show. I'd like to brag about that later on in the show. Another one added to the list is our next guest because she is rocking.
We're getting it all into one right now.
She's doing everything, man, and she's getting the job done. Monica McNutt joins us. Monica, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm fantastic on this. It's a terrific Thursday. That's my alliteration.
It is now, right? I mean, that's what we're going. Because for a second, you weren't sure it was Thursday. You grabbed that one out of thin air.
I was like, fabulous Thursday? That's not right. Wait.
Every day is fabulous when it's Monica McNutt. Listen, WNBA draft tonight. There are going to be some ladies. Their lives are about to change. You know what? It's going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I'm going to steal this word from LaChyna Robinson because she's so eloquent with it. But she called this draft pretty even in terms of there's not exactly a top-heavy round. But I still think it's really exciting. And in particular, when we look at some of our ACC ladies that are taking the next step, I think there's some gems in there. Maybe not some super highly touted kind of brand name pros right now, the way we saw in last year's draft a little bit, but I think we're going to have some solid professional players that have multi-year careers for sure out of this group.
All right, Monica, we talked to Tiana yesterday at length, and she talked about nerves and anxiousness and all these things. And then we also talked about basketball becoming a business. You know, it's a sport, and there's no question a lot of these people play select teams, those type deals, AAU, whatever the case may be. But this is the step into where the reality hits here. Of the players that we're looking at, why do I keep coming back mentally to Dana Evans being a star at the next level in the WNBA?
because you've had an opportunity to watch Dana play, Wes. And I think that's a great observation. And I can remember having this conversation last season with Elena Beard, who obviously had a terrific WNBA career, was a defensive player of the year, has won a national, or won a title in the WNBA. And she was thrilled about Dana. And we kept trying to make the comps for who Dana reminded us of in the league. And Skylar Diggins' name came up a little bit. Yeah. I know Elena's concern was her size, but I think this past year in particular, we saw Dana run the point guard position as a scoring point guard who knew that she bore the burden of productivity for this Louisville Cardinal squad. Imagine when Dana gets some heat back beside her, y'all. I mean, think back to Dana, her sophomore year, or even a little bit her junior year when she had Jasmine Jones and Kylie Shook running with her. She's a tremendous distributor. She's a heady basketball player. She's got tremendous basketball IQ. There's definitely going to be the curve, but I agree with you. I think that she's one of the players in this group that can have a double-digit WNBA career because she's so steady at her position, and she's willing to work. So the way that she enters the league will not be the way that she finishes the league, and she don't mind putting on her defensive straps. And I can always find you a spot on the floor for a shooter and a defender. There's always room.
Monica, take Dana out of it, because I think we all agree she can ball, right? And she's the full package. We've had her on the show half dozen times. She just can handle her business. She gets it. Everybody else in the pot, if you will, in the pool from the ACC for tonight's WNBA draft, who has the best chance to have an impact in the league other than Dana Evans? Who would you guess?
Okay. As their rookie year impact?
You define it however you want. You're the expert.
Okay. I think all of our girls are going to have a little bit of a curve, whether that is physically, mentally, the speed of the game. But I think that's fine. When I look at our group in terms of players that I think that will have sustainability in the league, obviously Dane's at the top of the list. Ivana Raza is someone that I think about that's a little bit underrated. And I think Janelle Bailey. I actually think statistically Janelle had a better year last year as opposed to this year. But I think what she brings in terms of knowing her role is so valuable, because when you are taking a step up to the next level, I think you've got to know what you're good at without question, right? I think Janelle knows that she can post, she can get on the boards, she can rebound, she can run the floor well, and she will get spot minutes and she will be able to be productive in those minutes and show that. And I think her role can grow. Of course, it depends on what team she ends up with. I also do think about her teammate Stephanie Watts. But again, Stephanie is someone to me, because she did so much at North Carolina, I can see where she might bite off a little bit more than she could chew initially and have to work her way in terms of what works in the league now. I wish Tiana the best of luck. I think Tiana's journey is continuing, and I was so humbled and inspired this year that she was so candid about still working to get her body back, even though she was on the floor. But we know the basketball IQ is there. We know the talent is there and the acumen. She's still working, I think, to get her body back. And now you add the additional challenge of going up a level. That makes that experience a little bit tricky. But when I think of Ivana Raza, she's got that European thing to her game. And there are so many European pros, and so many of the WNBA players play overseas. I think she's one that is sort of sneaky. She's going to have to get a little bit stronger, or she's just going to have to find a system that really works well for that sinewy type, you know, slippery style that she plays. But she can shoot. She can score inside. She's a little bit undersized at her position, but I think she'll be able to adjust to that curve because she's so competitive and her basketball roots are so deep.
Look at Monica bringing sinewy out to the Packer and Durham program today.
I would like to ask a follow-up question, because this is really for folks that are watching us on television more so than radio. Yeah. Everybody, because I was observing what and really listening to what you were saying, but you only gave the shimmy to the European.
But listen,
you only gave me the shimmy on European player. You know, that European, you went European player and gave me the shimmy. So, I'm not sure. So we don't have the shimmy here in the States? The American players don't have the shimmy? Is that what you're telling me?
Think about it, though. When I think of Ivana Raza, she has that up and under thing, and she's just kind of slippery, and she brings me that European. So it's very direct at Ivana Raza's game, because I think you look at her, and we had coaches talk about this. You look at her, and she's a little bit unassuming, but she's a beast for Wake Forest.
All right. I was just observing. That's all I was doing, Monica. I was just observing. Yeah.
Monica, here's the other thing, too. Ivana has a little bit of a perimeter game. I mean, she's not the yes. three-point line's in play for her. That's, to me, also makes her different, right?
100%. And I think in terms of her being lean, I think of, like, Ali Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot, who are not – particularly Ali, who's very lean. Ivana doesn't handle the ball and run the point guard spot the way that Ali does. But I think of athletes that are elusive, right? Ivana's going to be able to knock down the three. She can catch and shoot. She can give you a little 1-2 dribble. She's got great length. My biggest concern for her is her size. But again, if she can manage that curve as a freshman, as a rookie at this level, I think it's only a matter of time before she clicks and gets an opportunity. I mean, I think she's got a great basketball IQ, but I don't want to act as if, you know, the W is 144 spots, y'all. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a very deep league, and I think sometimes we dismiss how difficult it is to land. And so those are young women that we obviously had a chance to follow and watch up close and see them develop through the ACC. And I can see it, but I also know that there's a ton of work to making a WNBA roster. But the beauty of it is, even if it is not necessarily this year, the journey doesn't necessarily have to stop there. There are plenty of WNBA players who take different routes other than the traditional draft, land, and stick.
All right. You bring up an interesting point. Only 144 slots. The other thing that happens is the age requirement is 22 with no more college eligibility. On the guys' side, we see this mass exodus into the draft pool with or without an agent. From your perspective, which is unique, I would look to you and LaChana and Debbie to give us both sides of this. Where's that help the WNBA, and maybe where has it hurt the WNBA to having that rule as we look at it from the men's side, where I got to be honest with you, Monica, there are people declaring for the draft have no business declaring for the draft in this league and in other leagues. So what? Where does the WNBA benefit from the 22 and no more college eligibility left?
I do think that it protects the quality of the league. Listen, it's the same on the men's side. We've heard it at different points. But there's something different about a body that is 22 and has been tested and is physically prepared versus, you know, 18, 19, and yeah, I'm talented, but I still have to work on my physical capabilities. And so in that way, I do think because folks take such care of the WNBA, the rule is meant to protect the league, to keep the product at a high quality. However, I almost always fall on the side of the players. And I think, obviously, this conversation has been sparked this year because of Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark, and I think it's a fair conversation. But we haven't seen players like them since when, right? So they are outliers and exceptions to the rule. I do think that if young people have the option to go and join the military at 18, they should have the option to become professional athletes. Now, do I think that more women will take advantage of it? No, I don't necessarily. And in fact, quite honestly, if you run the risk of betting on yourself and the 144 spots are too tight, then that has been your decision, and therefore you have to then deal with the consequences. I don't take issue with that. I will say the one thing that I would like to see implemented, and I know that the WNBA doesn't have the traditional combine in the sense that the men pull up to Chicago and they show off your skills, I would like to see some sort of way that maybe young women can test the waters in the way that the men can without signing with an agent, so they still maintain their eligibility, just so that they can really sink in what this next level looks like. I think that might be the middle ground. But, you know, I love that we're having this conversation, and I have to lean towards some women that I know have been in the league and played in the league. And Imani McGee Stafford had a little bit of a Twitter thread this week about the issue is more about expansion as opposed to changing the age limit because there just isn't enough room. I think she's onto that, and I know Kathy Engelbert is following the numbers in terms of whether it is time to expand the league. But I think this is a fair conversation, but we got to remember, like, there's a reason that nobody had cleaned up all those national awards until Paige came along. It just doesn't happen that often.
Right. Yeah. Great stuff. Stay well. Always great to see you. Don't shimmy too much next time for Packer. He get, you know, put that Euro shimmy on us. Get that deal going. So
thanks for having me, guys. Y'all be good. Stay safe.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
A bunch of talented ladies. That's what we've had on the show this week. I mean, really talented. We'll get into that later on. Talented gentleman joined us yesterday, though, Wes. And I'll tell you what, he'll be front and center tonight in a major showdown right here on ACC Network.
Yeah, we just told you, Docs Aiken and Virginia host Duke tonight. We had a chance to visit with him yesterday. And when you watch him play tonight, remember that, last summer or so, he was going to leave lacrosse. He had gotten his undergrad at Virginia in foreign affairs, and he was going to go back home to Philadelphia and play football at Villanova. Then the FCS shut down. So then the next month or so was a little scary and a little crazy, to be honest, because he then decided to return to Virginia and play the extra year of lacrosse that he had earned in the spring. We started our visit yesterday just about the timing and all the weirdness that went on in his life with the decision to play football and then all of a sudden pivot back to playing lacrosse for Lars Tiffany.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It honestly didn't happen until towards the beginning of January for winter break. And just talking to some people, it seemed more of a possibility as time went along, and kind of the FCS was pushing for this spring season, and it didn't seem like a full guarantee. So I kind of felt like it was important to explore another option. And I was fortunate enough that everything fell into place. I got really, really lucky with classes and eligibility and all health things like that, which I don't fully understand. So I'm glad. I just kind of hoped and prayed and it worked out. But I just got really, really fortunate. That's kind of the moral of the story.
How do you go from a football mentality physically to a lacrosse mentality and what you go through from a physical standpoint there? Is that difficult?
I think the mindset stays the same in any sport. I think it's just you want to compete and you want to win. And that was kind of the ultimate decision for me, was knowing that there was going to be a season for lacrosse, and felt super comfortable with that. But I think physically, I think my conditioning definitely lacked for a long time, trying to come back with had a few extra pounds I had to shed before I could run up and down the field without like falling over. But I think just the competitive mindset kind of stays the same in any sport, and you can kind of mold your body with the sport as long as you kind of have that edge. So
Docs, any way to qualify what last Saturday's victory over Carolina meant to you guys, just in terms of the way the season has gone for you and Coach Tiffany?
Yeah, I think it's kind of represents the transformation our team's been through. I think early on, kind of started off a little slow. Offense wasn't clicking too well. And I think just over the course of 10 games, it's you've seen the progression of our offense. We've been able to move the ball so much better. There's a lot more trust and, more goals too. So that's nice.
Given the world of ACC men's lacrosse, I guess when you've gone through these crazy games where, hey, every competition you're playing somebody in the top 10, at least it seems that way, how do you put it in the rearview mirror, whether it's a great win like against North Carolina or maybe a tough loss? How difficult is it to put it in the rearview mirror?
I would say it's definitely a little difficult because you want to celebrate a big win like that. You kind of want to say, oh, I think we're getting better. But I think it is also a little bit easy to put in the rearview mirror just because, I think, we lost to Syracuse in North Carolina, and having that rematch on the schedule already was really cool for us to look forward to. So in terms of those two games, I think that'll be pretty easy, but you can't rest on your laurels with any win. We don't play Notre Dame on the regular season schedule a second time, and we're fortunate enough to edge them out a bit. So we just it's definitely a little bit tough, but with all the competition, you can't rest on your laurels. And there's a lot of big games coming up, so got to be excited about those.
All right, you mentioned that tomorrow night, Duke. Flashback a couple of years ago, great semifinal match with the Blue Devils. I mean, you guys seemingly bring out the best in one another, don't you?
Yeah, and unfortunately, they've been kind of the upper hand on that rivalry since I've been here, and I think for a long time. And we were super fortunate to play them in Philadelphia in 2019, and edge them out by a goal in double overtime, which was definitely a lifelong memory. But yeah, I mean, they definitely bring out the best in us. They are super athletic, they're super talented, and they just know how to win. Plain and simple. So we gotta play our best for sure. And I'm really looking forward to a Thursday night game against those guys for sure.
Docs, Lars yeah. Tiffany, your coach, has been really one of our favorite guys to talk to because we get into stuff that has nothing to do with lacrosse. And I can only imagine playing for him. It's got to be fun, too, because, hey, we're talking about boats, books or philosophy. There's always something with Lars, and that's why we love to have conversations with him. Playing for him, give me a couple examples of him throwing kind of some curveballs to you guys to understand, hey, there's more to life than just playing men's lacrosse.
Yeah, so, we have these sessions on Thursdays where we just talk about either books or videos that we're supposed to watch, and they're supposed to, create discussion and about, team culture and things like that. And so our recent theme has been Ubuntu, which is a term that was coined by the 2008 Boston Celtics team. And so we kind of talked about that for a bit. And now very frequently coach will just kind of, throw the word Ubuntu into a conversation, whether or not it makes total contextual sense or not. That's pretty funny.
Hey, Docs, just between us here, has he just ever cracked you up with, do you guys sometimes, he'll say something and y'all just walk away shaking your head going, okay, that's Lars.
Yeah, I think it's just because he's so much smarter than all of us that we totally don't understand. We're not on the same wavelength, but a ton. We often walk away from conversations just like, wow, that was fun.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though, come game day, everybody's on the same page, though, aren't they? I mean, he really is a tremendous coach.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think just his attention to detail is – something that, my mental capacity probably couldn't withstand. And he is just every single day, if something's not right, we got to get it right. And, that brings out the best in us. And while on a hot day, it might be, stressful and kind of annoying, but by game day, we'll be ready and we'll be dialed. And owe a lot to him for qualities like that.
Yeah.
Big one tonight, man. I'm telling
Great
you.
Great stuff.
ACC men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse. It is awesome. And again, tonight, 7 p.m. right here, ACC Network. You'll be good to go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.